Moncrief on News Talk.
This is World Bipolar Week, and while the general aim is to make all of us a bit more aware of it, it's also important for people with bipolar to hear from others who have it too. That's certainly the view of the novelist and podcaster Sophie White, who's been writing about her bipolar experience in today's Independent. Afternoon, Sophie.
Hi, Sean. How are you?
Not too bad. Given this is Bipolar Week and you've been writing about it, is that difficult for you to kind of go over it again or speak about it or think about it?
Yeah, I think it's always nerve-wracking, especially if you are lucky enough to have a platform like me. I don't ever want to anyone to feel like I'm sort of speaking on behalf of like a huge group of people who all have like extremely unique experiences of this illness. And so it's nerve-wracking. And obviously, I think it's so much easier for me to be articulate in writing because that's what I do. So once it kind of becomes a conversation like this, it's definitely, yeah, it's hard and it's kind of a bit, I don't know, makes me feel a bit vulnerable. But
Yeah.
But thanks for asking.
Yeah. No, I just, because it's not, it can't be easy. Because you know you've so much else in your life as well as living with bipolar, then to go out and have to speak it and it kind of explain yourself in a way to people.
Yeah, but I mean, it's such a privilege that I have to be able to like even communicate. Like a lot of you know people who are living with mental illness, like you know they like won't have had the kind of support and advantages that I've had. And may find it like really difficult to like engage in a conversation like this about their illness. So like genuinely, like, thank you for giving space to this because, you know, like obviously it is really important to me to hear from other people with bipolar. And yeah, like I said, in the piece that I wrote for the Sunday Indo, you know, an awareness week like this, it's like always in danger of kind of like slipping into being sort of like an exercise in lip service. And I suppose where like the work that organizations like Aware do, you know, they're able to kind of like really push this forward as a conversation and like really like help like in a very, I think, meaningful way and like get conversations about what it really is like to have a mental illness as opposed to just a nod to, oh, this exists, and, oh, make sure you look after your mental health. You know, like, that always kind of really bothers me when we're talking about kind of awareness weeks, and even the phrase, like, mental health is used a lot instead of mental illness. And, like, this might seem, like, kind of pedantic of me, but I do kind of think it's still a bit of a linguistic dodge to say, oh, you know, we care about mental health because, you know, what we need to be saying is like, we care about mental illness and like name it and, you know, really engage with the fact that it's a, like a living reality for loads of people, loads and loads of us, even if it's not you personally with the illness. Like, you know, I really, in all the years I've been writing about this, and my first book came out in 2016. So I've been writing about, you know, my experiences as a mentally ill person for like 8 years. And I genuinely have time and again been really blown away by the empathy that people like respond to my story with. Like, so as much as it's like, it can feel like very stigmatized still, genuinely, I think there's barely a person around who hasn't been touched by it in some way. And, you know, so it's,
important. Indeed. And it was, and in your case, Sophie, it seems it was, from reading your article, it was dramatic in the sense of, you know, one day everything was fine and the next day things weren't.
Yeah, it was crazy. Going crazy was crazy, would you believe? I was 22 in 2007 and I had just graduated college from NCID, and I was at a lecture picnic and I took a pill on the Saturday night. And like you said, like it was just like literally on that Saturday morning, I just woke up like your absolute average you know, 22-year-old. And like by the end of that night, like something had been like disturbed in my brain and stayed that way really for a long time. And it was like a switch flipping. It's like cliche, but it's the only way I can really think to describe it. And it was like my days just became just terrifying. There was just this abiding kind of sense of dread. It was like the feeling, you know, when you're in a nightmare and everything just is kind of drenched in this dread, and you wake up like always with a sense of like, oh my God, relief. Thank God that's not real. But that was like how I felt every kind of waking moment. And I think it's really traumatizing, the first experience of mental illness, because it's like it's a sudden realization that like of what our brains are capable of in terms of like being very ill. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I found that in those first days, weeks, and then months after that night, I was just battling like spiraling obsessive thoughts, I became really convinced that like reality wasn't real, and that like all my memories of my life were fake, and that the people in my life around me had been replaced. I mean, like genuinely really terrifying. And, you know, I used to kind of hear like whispers in my ears and things looked strange. And it was really like, I really felt I'd broken my brain, like, forever. Like, I didn't really know how you could ever come back from something like this. And, you know, I really, like, it started to feel like ending my life was the only way that this would ever end.
Crikey.
And it's, like, it's really scary when death starts to look like a solution. And I think that's something that I'm always trying to get across when I'm talking about this, and especially talking about like experiencing suicidal ideation, is so frightening. It's terrifying, you know, like, because particularly like I certainly had enough awareness left to be like, this is real, like, this is so wrong. And I, you know, even had the awareness that like this would destroy like the people in my life who loved me. But that was how acute the like illness was, that like the experience of being mentally ill is unbearable. Like, you know, it can be really unbearable. I think that like we talk about it, and we talk about it in terms of kind of if you're feeling down, and like, again, like I think the kind of euphemisms, like, yeah, look, it's hard to get comfortable talking about this stuff. And we, you know, we put kind of gentler language on it. And I sometimes think that doesn't really serve us that much. Like, being suicidal is not being down. It's not even being like deeply sad sometimes. Like, sometimes it's really, really just like terrifying. And, you know, yeah, it's, so, I mean, spoiler, I didn't, as I'm here talking to you.
So you knew something was wrong with your brain. Was there part of you that had the awareness that something wrong with my brain, and an option is to get my brain fixed? Or was that manic episode so overwhelming that at first, at least, you couldn't do that?
Yeah, I like really found it really hard to understand what had happened to me. And I had so little like experience and knowledge of like what mental illness can be like. And I like, there just wasn't, like when I kind of sat down to write this piece, I really wanted to write it for myself, like for my younger self, like what would have given me hope back then, you know, would be to read that someone had felt this mad and this sad and this bad and had made it through. And because that was something I just couldn't imagine. I just couldn't imagine how you could be so broken in your mind, and so broken that like reality didn't look right. Like the fabric of reality was kind of so distorted. And I suppose like it's like learning what our brains are capable of as well when they're ill, as well as when they're well, you know, like they're delicate things that we need to to respect and, you know, mind. And I suppose I found it so hard to tell anyone, like when we're talking about in terms of getting help, I found it so hard to really say fully what was happening to me. Like, so I said a lot of like, oh, I'm just not feeling well. I'm not feeling that well. And, you know, but I think that especially like those closest to me, like my mother was amazing. And my boyfriend, who's now my husband, was amazing. I think they were scared because it is scary to watch somebody completely change. Like everything about me, like the way I walked, the way I was in the world was gone. And it was this brand new person. Like it was a person who was very blank and very frightened. And, you know, and like, so my mom was incredible. And my mom, like, again, for the time, like 2007, like it's just different. Like the kind of conversation was different. I felt really ashamed as well that I had brought this on myself with, you know, my lifestyle. And like, it was my mom who like really, really spearheaded like getting me referred to a psychiatrist. And I mean, I remember like cancelling appointments and, you know, just finding that step really difficult, but really? Eventually being like, I cannot, you know, the only other path was so dark that, like, you know, I really remember like getting the bus to the psychiatrist for the first time and being in a real state of shock that like this was happening to me and that like I wasn't who I was anymore. Like that was really hard. And like, it is a hard aspect of mental illness, is kind of grieving that person that you won't ever be again in a way. But like, also there is so much on the other side. Like that's what I really want to kind of be for other people, I guess, or be for somebody who might find themselves where I found myself, you know, at 22, is like, I think I thought all of my dreams were over. You know, I just thought, well, whatever is wrong with me now, this is it. And everything I ever thought, like, you know, everything that I wanted for my life, like, and it's not big things. It's like having a family that feels now out of the question. And again, like, I just feel like I want to sit here and be like, it doesn't ever maybe go. It definitely, mental illness can kind of shape shift over the course of your life. But at the same time, life is long. And like, you can get through these episodes, you can get through these times, and you can, like, you know, lead a really meaningful life too. And like, I feel so lucky. Like, I have three gorgeous boys. It was my birthday yesterday, and they all like,
oh, happy birthday.
My bed. Yes, thank you. Again, like, actually every year that I celebrate my birthday, I think about how I have had another year. Like, that's, I think, something as well, is like, if you survive a period of suicidal ideation, it's like, you know, it's a real gift to survive. And it's also like very, I feel like people are so ashamed of, you know, having those kind of periods in their life that like they don't see themselves as being courageous because you know, it's not, and I'm not saying that anybody who doesn't make it is not, because they have battled and we don't know, you know what I mean? But I'm just saying that like, it's a full picture.
It's also though, I imagine, kind of an ongoing process that the longer you live with it, the more you're able to go, things are a bit, you know, things are a bit off at the moment. Maybe you have to go and book yourself in, that kind of thing. Self-care, I suppose.
Yeah, like, I definitely try to live in the kind of ways that are going to help me and not exacerbate. Like, so, I mean, literally basics, sleep, you know, take my meds, you know, talk to, you know, the people I need to talk to about what's going on. Like, the thing is, I think I've continued to have episodes and like some of them really significant. Like, I do think nothing ever hits quite as bad as the very first one, because it's so terrifying. Whereas like with each episode now, I think, well, okay, I've done this, I've done this before. But I think every time there is still this like real nagging feeling of like, what if this is it? Like, what if this is the time that I can't come back? But like, I have. And I want to say it to anyone listening, like, you know, I think when you're in it, you think there's nobody, maybe nobody has ever felt this exact thing before. Do you know what I mean? And sure, maybe nobody has, I guess. But like, at the same time, you know, it's life is long, better days are coming. Like, you know, it's but it is really hard, even with all of the kind of experience of getting well, experience of having really good stretches, long stretches of wellness in my head. And, you know, if I have a setback, it can still be really terrifying. Like, you can just still really take you right back to, I'm broken, and, you know, this will never be kind of, I'll never outrun it. But, you know,
because it sounds like it's not just the disease, it's your feelings about the disease as well.
Definitely. Like, I do feel that, like, the stigma around mental illness, like, has improved, like, you know, like, radically. And that's amazing. But it's kind of, I do find one of the things with it that is so hard is how much we kind of can stigmatize ourselves when you have this illness. And it's kind of almost a bit of a, like, the call is coming from inside the house kind of vibe, where, like, you know, the voice in your head, like, can often be like so harsh, so much harsher. Like, even like now, like getting ready to come and talk to you, like the voice in my head was like, oh my God, like, you're banging this drum again. And like, would you just shut up, you know? And like, and also a lot of like kind of real worries of like, you know, people listening will think that you were irresponsible to have children, or people listening will think, yeah, like that kind of stuff is, I think, a big part of how we have been socialized to stigmatize these illnesses.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like, it's just one of those, this is like amazing illness that will blame you for having it, you know?
Annoying. was it useful or not to you to get, you know, a final diagnosis?
Yeah, definitely, because I think, and I wrote about this in one of my books, not to like plug it, but it's called Coursing. And if anyone has experienced mental illness, alcoholism, grief, it's a smorgasbord of misery in that book, but I'm told that it's a fun book. But I talked about that feeling of getting a diagnosis kind of like slightly later on, like in my 30s, and how it was like, you know, the way in like a horror movie, it's all about what you don't see that makes it so frightening.
Yeah.
And the unknown of it is what makes it so frightening. And almost like, as soon as you see the mechanical shark in Jaws, like, and I mean, not to be down on Spielberg, and God knows he'll be so hurt to hear me critiquing his masterpiece Jaws. But as soon as you see the mechanical shark, it's like, oh, okay, right. I know what this is now. And I know what we need to do, kind of. Or like, and it always reminds me as well, the way Pennywise in Stephen King's It, like, takes on the form of your greatest fear, and like that Pennywise kind of as an entity doesn't really have a kind of a form. And I, that always really reminds me of kind of mental illness, in that like it's such a kind of, it can feel so overwhelming, it can just feel like there is no end to kind of the sort of torment that your brain can kind of do. But when you kind of get a name for it, I really think it helps to kind of feel that this can be dealt with. And, you know, I mean, sometimes the names can be really intimidating, can be scary. There's definitely layers of stigma, like, through the full spectrum. Like, I think that we're getting really good about talking about depression and anxiety. I think that, you know, there are other illnesses that really need more work to destigmatize them, and, you know, and to engage with like what it feels like to live with those illnesses as well, you know, like, and that's the thing, I guess, that I'm always conscious of when I get an opportunity to speak about this, I always think about the people who can't speak and how we really have to like work hard to hear them, like even more so, you know?
Yeah.
So it's like, you know, like I've been in psychiatric hospital and so I've met people and, you know, talked to people and like, you know, been friends with people who probably mightn't be able to do this, like mightn't be able to do what I'm able to do here in terms of having an organized conversation about this. I mean, it's relatively organized. I don't think anyone expects me to bring up Pennywise and Jaws. But
that's why it's you, Sophie. That's kind of brilliant about it. Sophie, like the screen in front of me is filled up with people essentially saying the same thing, that that because you've spoken about it, it's made them feel less alone. And presumably
they are
people who have gone through similar experiences. Thanks a million for talking to us today. Sophie White is
Thank you so much.
A novelist, podcaster and vehement Steven Spielberg critic. Sophie, thanks a million.
Moncrief, weekdays at 2 p.m. on News Talk.